I'm a shot in the dark, wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right, here we go. Episode 174. 174. What's going on? I say, hey, I'm not off my big paleo cleanse thing, but I'm not as super strict on it. I've added a little bit of wine back in. I'm trying to drink less coffee than I normally drink, but not, you know, I've gotten a little loose around the edges, and I it's funny. I'm already seeing a plateau. So whatever I was doing before was what was causing kind of the weight loss. So I'm going to have to tighten it down again and then be a little more methodic about adding things back in, because I don't want to stop the forward progress there. But part of my cheating, one thing I've just been craving, like, you don't understand. There are things that I crave, and then there are things that I need. And one of those things is sushi. I am like, oh God, I love sushi so much. It is amazing. You know, it's kind of sidebar. It's funny. When I moved to California, there were things that I either never thought I would like, or when I first tried them, I didn't like them. And I've come to like some of those things. Two or three of those things have become things that, like, I can honestly say, like, I need. Or it's a felt need. It's not a real objective need, but it's a need. And sushi is one of those things. In 97, when I moved to California from Southern Missouri, they said they wanted to, friends of mine, like, hey, let's go see some sushi. And I'm like, yeah, I tell you what. This redneck ain't eating that. You dredge that thing in cornmeal and deep fry it. Give me some tartar sauce or some cocktail sauce, some ketchup. Maybe I'll think about eating that. But what you don't understand, what I didn't understand, was that I didn't like that fishy flavor. And if you have super, super, super fresh raw fish, the only way to make it taste fishy is to cook it. So it's like... sushi is a need, and I'd been feeling that need. Oh, by the way, the other thing that I need that I didn't like at first at all, and I have brother Reginald Wolford, OP, soon to be father Reginald Wolford, OP, to thank for it. He was slacker surfer Ryan. I don't know what his number, his letters were, but he didn't have any letters. He was slacker surfer Ryan at the time, but now he's brother Reginald. And so that's menudo, dude, menudo. If you don't eat menudo, oh man, it's an acquired taste if you're not from that culture. I'll admit it, man. It's like, the funny thing was, I wasn't thrown off it. So it's a spicy tripe stew with like hominy in it. That they make for every Mexican restaurant on earth makes it Saturday and Sunday. And it kind of fulfills the role of like chili does in kind of the Anglo culture. It's a soup, but it's a certain kind of soup that's repeatable that everyone has kind of a take on, and you make it, but like on special occasions, you'll make a big pot of it or something, but it's an every weekend thing for Mexican restaurants. And you put all this stuff in it. You put these little chilies and this dried oregano and cilantro and onion and some different things. And, you know, squeeze lime in it, and you get some tortillas or some rice on the side. And man, I need menudo sometimes. It's kind of bitter spicy, and it's got that really weird texture of the tripe, but I don't know, man, it's better than the sum of the parts. It's just, yeah. Also in that same arena, buche. Taco de buche. I'm going to California soon, and when I go, the first thing I do when I get to Ventura, California, is I go to Lalo's on the Avenue. Shout out to Lalo's. Any of you Ventura counterpositioners out there, get yourself down to Lalo's on the Avenue and get taco de buche. Now, buche sounds even worse. Buche is pork stomach. that's been boiled down the way you make carnitas until it's like frying in its own fat, you know? And so, but, and I've had the buche here at La Calle in Denver is pretty good, but it's like kind of steamed. It's kind of soft, you know, and it's got flavor, but it's not my thing. It's not my jam, but that maybe they just put it on the grill and kind of cook it up. Maybe they overcook it. Maybe that's how I like it. I don't know, but it's a little crispy on the outside with chewy on the inside. And anytime I'm in Ventura, first stop, Lalo's, hands down, taco de buche. Anyway, so I went to get sushi last night. I was stuck going to Restaurant Depot after work, and the traffic was horrible, and a storm was setting in, and I was hungry. And there was Sushi Katsu, all you can eat for an incredible price. And it's funny, I hate to say this, but I think my palate has shifted a little bit. It was my first time having rice, and I got gluten-free soy sauce, but it was still soy. And it was good, but it wasn't like mind-blowingly good. Now, there's a couple things that I really like. I like the Philadelphia roll that's got a little bit of cream cheese in it without the crab. Didn't get that because I didn't want to do dairy. I didn't want to pile dairy into the same meal because I haven't really done anything but a little bit of butter one time. So maybe, but there's all the stuff that I ate, and it was fresh. It was fresh. It was amazing. It was as good as they ever make it. And I don't know, man, something shifted in me. It didn't, maybe it was just the mood. I was a little worried about these contract negotiations and stuff I'm going through right now with my day job. Maybe I was just distracted, but it didn't blow my mind, and it blew my mind that it didn't blow my mind. So there you go, sushi. So yeah, isn't it weird how there's things that, I don't know, there's a lot of things that I didn't like when I was a kid that I like now. Like, well, I mean, a million things, but like cottage cheese. It's funny. I just could not brook the texture of cottage cheese, man. When I was a kid, oh, you couldn't get me to eat cottage cheese for anything in the world. It was just nasty to me. It was, and my aunt used to have it around all the time and eat it when she kept me, and I just wasn't down for it. I tried it one time. Nope. Now, anytime I'm at a salad bar, when I'm eating dairy, I always put like a big scoop of cottage cheese, and I tell you, when I started eating cottage cheese, I was working at Pizza Hut when I was like 16, and I would get a salad, and for some reason, cottage cheese with that crappy ranch dressing stuck to the edge of it with those little club crackers from Pizza Hut. that was good stuff to me at 16. I don't know. My palate has matured, shall we say. But yeah, there's just things I didn't like. Now, the other thing that I liked when I was a kid, and I've told this story on the show, so I don't think it's been in the last, maybe it's been in the last 10 shows. If so, drink. Some of you are a new listener, there's a drinking game associated with the show. And if I tell a story that I've told in the last 10 episodes without knowing it, but I know I'm telling this story, and that's liver and onions. Beef liver and onions, my aunt used to make it for me. I loved it because no one forced me to eat it. My mom was forced to eat it and hated it, but she would make it for me anyway. So, yeah, liver and onions too. There you go. So, all right. So, chatty first segment became a culinary palate exploration today here on the counter position. Speaking of, man, I need some food. I'm a little foggy. If I'm extra ADD today, it's because I got busy and didn't eat. So, and that's basically the story of this, the end of this segment here is that, oh man, I hate when I get into a mode where I've just got tons of stuff to do. We have the intensive weeks of class where I have like 40 to 60 extra students coming on campus, and I have to feed and caffeinate all of them, and that gets out of hand quick. You know, it's I got off work yesterday and it was just so busy. I had to go do errands and get some stuff that we needed to shop, and got home last night and I had to finish all that contract proposal, and I went to bed, and it's like, you know, then it's like there's meetings and there's then more bar shift and then another meeting. It's just like, I hate when I get in these modes where I don't have time to kind of stop and reflect on what I've done, what I've heard, what I've seen. And it just, I start just, I feel like everything is a means with no end at that point. You know, you gotta, I think we want to see that there's meaning in what we're doing, but sometimes it's like, okay, look, you're trying to do this, so you have to do this, but to get that done, you have to do this, and then you have to do this, and then, well, before that, you're going to have to do this, and so for the sake of all that, you do this first. But you're like six tiers of means. You're working on a means to 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 an end. And if you're not careful, that can really seem like drudgery. Now, two corrections of that, I think, are A, force yourself to stop and remember strategically and productively, what is this for? What outcome is this attached to? What project is that attached to? You know, kind of think it through. This is kind of GTD productivity stuff. But then, and ultimately get back to the real end that you're working on, right? But then another thing is to just stop and just remember what your ultimate end is. And that would be, and the best way to do that is prayer. Just stop and just say just for a second to God, I've forgotten even why I'm doing this right now. I've lost track of the goal in sight, but ultimately you're my goal. So I ask you to bless this work and make it meaningful. You know, that's a powerful little quick super prayer you can pray in the car between meetings. But all right, let's head off to the break. When we get back, we're going to talk some more about this Orlando thing from a little different perspective than I ranted about yesterday. You're listening to The Counter Position.
Let my sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Let me skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. The only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so yesterday I talked about the Orlando shooting, and we're going to talk about that a little bit again today, but from a different perspective. I was just like reacting to all the idiocy I saw on the internet and just all the people coming to all these false conclusions and diving on all kinds of false, you know, dichotomies and stuff. And I went at it very ideologically yesterday. And even though I tried to say time and time again that this was a human issue, I don't know if my tone bore that out. And so I wanted to kind of approach that. I want to say again, one more time, this at its core, you can erase at the core of this. I mean, there are truths beyond this, but you can erase the religion of the shooter, erase the moral life or the sexual life or the location of the killed, of the victims. And ultimately, you can say this was a human being who, by his very nature and calling in the image of God, was called to love. And he failed to do that. And in fact, he chose the opposite and chose to take things into his own hands and hurt people kind of in the name of God, right? Which is not his place to do. Now, secondly, the victims were persons, people that just did not sign up to get killed, that were due love, that were due compassion, that by their very nature as persons are designed where the only proper stance towards which that they're the type of being that the only proper stance towards is love, right? That's what Wattiwa says. And I think it's perfectly true. What do we mean by to love there? Well, that's a pretty deep question, but we can go and say it is to desire the good for those persons. Now, there is kind of a mindset in some people who are hurting people for the sake of bringing judgment on them or punishing them for something that they see as a great offense to God or to nature or whatever. And there is, you look at Socrates, and he talks about how in the truest sense of the word, the criminal is never happier than when he's being punished and brought to justice, right? So there is a certain possible kind of insight there that has been twisted and screwed in the mind of someone through religious ideology and through what looks to be like probably just some serious personality disorder and a deep conflict inside himself. There's a lot of reports coming out that this guy was a regular, at least a semi-frequent regular at Pulse Bar. So that might be, to a certain extent, a man who has, who's maybe he's dealing with same-sex attraction himself. Maybe he was just casing the joint. Maybe this was a long play for him, so he was casing the joint and getting everybody used to his face so that if he walked in, even carrying a bag or something, no one would notice. I don't think so. The reports say that he would come in and get very drunk. So I think that maybe this is someone who was dealing with same-sex attraction, and the way he dealt with it was to have kind of this ideal, this attempt at an ideological turn and make this, this conscious act to do, violence, which should have been an internal kind of violence of the will to mortify his will and to seek to change or to carry his cross. But I mean, he's not playing with that theology. God is not Father. There is no cross. There's no sharing in suffering, because there was no suffering to share in, right? But it seems like this might have been a very violent outward manifestation of an internal conflict, which is funny because, or not funny, but it's just kind of interesting, because if you look at modern, we could call them liberal or modern peaceful Islamic scholars, they interpret those parts in the Quran about jihad as an internal struggle, primarily the same way that we as Christians look at things in the Old Testament and things that look like they're a call to violence. We read them in a spiritual sense now, right? And there are Islamic scholars who think that way and who write that way. Now, and like, as I said yesterday, I'm not here to argue whether or not that is Orthodox Islam or not. I don't care. Right? I'm not really worried about whether or not someone in that religion as being pure to their original vision of their religion. In fact, if that means they're liberal, I hope they all become liberals. So that being said, there was that part of that. Now, I think this plays out into a deeper conversation about the setting and the culture in which this was in. And so I want to talk a little bit about gay culture and about the gay club. The gay bar. That was, I saw a guy interviewed that was in a bathroom stall, and he was shot several times but didn't die. But people all around him that were between him and the shooter, a bunch of people crammed into a bathroom stall trying to hide. Some of them died, and he just is obviously and rightly traumatized by the situation. And he was talking about how he heard someone that was kind of an older person in that community say that's so wrong. That's like going in and shooting up a church. This ground is sacred. And at first, of course, the same way you probably just felt, I kind of repulsed at that. I was kind of like, God, you're replacing the church with a place to drink and hook up, right? But they went on and said, look, that here's what you have to understand. And I think that it's something I hadn't really thought clearly about. I knew I had been around. There was a bar really close to where I lived in Cape Girardeau that was a gay bar, and I had friends who went there. Good story I'll tell sometime about my friend's band playing there, and we didn't know there was going to be a drag show during the intermission, but that's a story for another time. But what he meant by that is that that was their place. That was the place where they feel safe. They don't feel accepted. Now, that being said, in the modern world, especially in Florida, especially, I mean, if this had been like in Miami Beach or something, it's hard to think that there's that much of a stigmatization anymore, but maybe there still is. Maybe, I mean, there is. We have to remember, it looks like if you watch television and media, you would think that every other person out there is gay and in the closet, but really, the best numbers we have after we've corrected all the bad data in the Kinsey estimations and the Kinsey numbers from that old weird pervert back in the day, is that really about 3% of people are gay, lesbian, bisexual, trans. So there probably is still a bit of, you know, they probably do very much feel like the outsider, right? So these places are places they go to drop their guard, to not be judged, to be accepted, and to be with others that are like them, right? Now, what I want to talk about a little bit today is that looking at what that is as a place and why, what we can maybe learn from it. What can we maybe even, dare I say, take lessons of how to approach our churches, or how to build a coffee house, or how to create an event or a space or a small group or something, based on some insights of what these people are seeking, right? Now you're going to say, well, great, you want me to, you know, what, you're going to do a talk like six things we can learn from the gay bar for the new evangelization or something? Maybe I will. But as we go to the break, I will remind you of something I talked about really early on an early episode. And that was the three H's. It's kind of core to what I do. And it's like when you go fishing, you have to think about the three H's, the habitats, the habits, and the hunger. So where are these fish at? How do they act when they're there? When did they go there? Why did they go to this place more than this other place? Do they go to this place at a particular part of the day? What do they do when they're there? And ultimately, what causes hunger in them? Right? So, as we look at this today, I want to defend this mode of engagement, because if we're wanting to fish, if we're wanting to reach people, if we're wanting to be fishers of men, as Christ said, then we have to think about how to say it. We have to think about the world and what we're doing from their perspective, so we can try to understand them as persons, just like us, and try to find a middle ground, or find a way to say what we're going to say in a way that we might get to listen. So, all right, you're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley.
Then how we crave a hanging and it's dark.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
People singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right, so we're talking about the Orlando shooting, but I wanted to talk about some of the commentary that I've seen I just the lofty language, like a church, a sacred place, our place, the role that the gay bar plays in gay culture, I think is a deep insight into that culture, these people, and what they're going through, and why, and it might be give us some insight into how to create a place or create a space where someone might be open to conversation or dialogue or even discipleship. And so now let me get out of the way. I haven't said this. I've said it before on the show, but maybe you're a new listener. I don't have, just doctrinally in the Catholic Church, there is, we are not Jerry Falwell. We're not convinced you're possessed by the devil. You're not just simply choosing this. There are, we're very open to what's going on with homosexuals in the sense of like, we're not dead set on a cookie cutter answer on what causes same-sex attraction. I keep saying homosexual. Homosexual sounds as if there is a being that is designed in a different way than the way our being is designed, where we're built in complementarity for sexual reproduction, but where there isn't such a thing. There's people who are built in complementarity, just like everyone else, who for some reason have a sexual attraction or a physical attraction in this genital way towards people of the same sex, right? But I've known people who are gay that, I mean, from the time they were little, we knew that there's just something different about the guys, you know. It just, I have close friends that I have talked about this with in intimate detail, and they assure me that the same thing that Trey, what's that guy's name? Trey Patterson? The Christian singer that just came out. They experienced this the exact same time that I figure out that Susie looks different in her swimsuit than Billy does, and I kind of am interested in that. They are like interested in Billy right at that moment, and they always have been. There are people like that for sure, and if you don't believe me, go make some gay friends and earn the right to be heard and talk to them. So there is a phenomena where this in fact does happen. Right. And a lot of times people don't want it. Why would you want it? Especially until about 10 years ago, it would just get you ostracized from society and people just stayed in the closet and, you know, because they're out of fear. Right. And remember, as Catholics, we believe in hylomorphic being. That's a big word for saying we are a body soul composite. And so everyone thinks that religion is about the soul in this sense, but it's about the person, and human persons have bodies, and they are definitely a part of our reality in a sense. We're in the Catholic Church, as in with the entire ancient church, we believe that matter matters. That's why we use smells and bells and oil and water and all that stuff, because matter matters, right? That's why there's rules around what we do with our bodies, because our bodies are important. They're not just prisons to trap some kind of platonic wispy eternal spirit that will finally escape this prison and go off and be one drop in the great Buddhist ocean of non-existence and non-identity. No, we don't believe that. We believe that you are and will ever be a person. You were that person, and that person ultimately has a body. We get our bodies back in our theology, right? So I don't know. My pet theory is that 1,000 years from now, they're going to be looking back on this era and they're going to go, oh yeah. See, at that point, remember at that point in the early part of the 21st century, they still hadn't figured out the connection between contraceptive birth control pills and that one thing that they were doing with the genetic modification of the corn over here and how that was showing up. And they hadn't figured, you know, I think that there's going to be some combination of, you know, electric light late into the evening versus, you know, the increased amount of sugar. I think it just has to do with hormonal things we're messing with ourselves by not living in the way we're designed to live. And then obviously once that gains some steam, it's become now it's popular. You're closed-minded if you're not open-minded to all that. So there's, I think it seems like this, I just wanted to say that as the Catholic, in the Catholic Church and in my own take on things, there, you see this as nurture in some people, not nature properly speaking, but broken nature or misfiring nature in some others. And you know, could, and it could be just straight up spiritual in some, right? It's but we're open to that. So we're not, and so for the sake, there is no sin whatsoever in the experience of same-sex attraction. It is an attraction towards sex out, genital, you know, interaction or genital, you know, sexual interaction. I hate to use the word sexual because that word is starting to lose its meaning related to gender, but it's sexual attraction, sexual, a desire for sexual-esque activity outside of the bounds of the, that was designed for, right? But I experienced that, right? I routinely see women that I find beautiful and sexually attractive who I'm not married to, who I want to have sex with. I know, shock, everyone, shock. I have felt the desire to have sex with women that I'm not married to because I'm single. Wow. I know that's, I'll probably get my show canceled. I have a friend of mine who was a brand new clergy, and he had to go to like that safe training or whatever, and he was in a super liberal diocese, and everybody was, they were encouraged to go around and talk about some things that they are tempted by or they deal with, you know, like, and there's people bringing stuff up, and he says, well, I have to admit, sometimes I deal with opposite sex attraction. And they're like, what's that? It's like, well, sometimes I see a woman and I think to myself, if I weren't celibate, then I would like to marry her and have sex and procreate and, you know, raise the kids together and have that kind of deep family intimacy. Sometimes I think about that. It's like, so yes. So anyway, man, this turned into an entire segment, which was not my intention. So anyway, look, we all deal with different, an attraction to go to color outside the line, so to speak, right? Those lines are just different for different people. Sometimes and admittedly that's farther outside the lines. That's, you know, than just the wrong person at the wrong time. It's the wrong type of person at the wrong time, right? And the wrong person. So, that I just wanted to get that out there, that we don't think the gays are bad people. They're not evil. Someone who experiences same sex attraction is not the devil. Simply don't think that. And you may have noticed that no Catholics have walked into a bar and shot a bunch of gay people lately. There's a reason for that, because that's not how we think about it. That's not how we think it. That's not what we do, right? So now let's look at, get back to our topic, which I got off, which I am wont to do on occasion. And let's talk about the gay bar here. Let's talk about, what is this place? What role does it fulfill? And it is a place where they can drop their guard, quote unquote, and be themselves, quote unquote, right? And now that's what I want to look at. I want to look at this be ourselves statement. It seems like that is a we have decided in the modern world. Now, this isn't just with homosexuals by any means. This is the entire modern world. We have decided that to be ourselves, a place where we can be ourselves, is a place where no one will judge us. And what we mean is no one will judge our actions. And what we mean by that is that no matter what we do, which this isn't really true, but no matter what we do, it will be affirmed as okay and good, and we'll be encouraged in doing it. That is a place. But that is a place that you are not challenged, right? Now, let's look at, what's funny is that looks a lot like the modern world. It looks like our modern relationships and friendships. Quite honestly, in a lot of places, it looks like the modern churches, right? Come get affirmed. Come get told that you're okay, and I'm okay, and everything's okay, and keep doing what you're doing. and we'll just all feel the warmth of community while we're all doing our thing. Now, the opposite would be, I think back in the day, there was a certain kind of a disorder or dysfunction where you would go to church to be condemned. And it wasn't like, oh, I want to go to church to be reminded where I'm bad and wrong so I can change. It was, you go once a week, you get yelled at and told that you're a piece of crap and that you're going to hell. And then whether you were told that, that's what you hear. You might have been preaching a beautiful sermon on the woman caught in adultery or something, but because of all this weird guilt that twists everything, we hear, okay, yeah, I suck, and I'm no good. Okay, good. Now I got another week. I can go do whatever I want because I came and I submitted myself to the suffering of being told that I'm a horrible person or whatever. Once again, I'm not saying that's what church was. I'm saying that's what people heard. And to a certain extent, perception is reality when it comes to those kind of matters. So in this final segment, I want to just kind of riff on what is possible to glean from this in the way that we might build some places, or we might change some things about the places we have or carry ourselves, you know? All right, so you're listening to The Counterposition. I'm your host, Andrew Whaley. I'll be right back.
Then all the color glass, that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. I've decked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dumb.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, we're talking about the Orlando shooting, which got us talking about the gay bar. Had a nice solid aside in the third segment where I kind of tried to give the overall caveat that we're not Jerry Falwell and we're not Islamic jihadists, that we don't think everybody with same-sex attraction is going straight to H-E double hockey stick, that there's no sin in dealing with a particular attraction or a particular iniquity of some kind. I admitted, I came out of the closet today on the show. Andrew came out. You can tell everybody this is Andrew comes out. Maybe I'll make the title of that. Boy, that'll get some downloads. I came out as having attractions and inclinations, even around the same area of sex in my life, that are not ordered. I sometimes want to have sex with women I am not married to. I am single. And I've seen women that I was sexually attracted to. And what is we use that word, sexual attraction. What do you mean? It means you want to have, you like the idea of having sex with someone. I mean, on a base level, there's a deeper attraction where there's a deeper reality hiding underneath that, where the beauty of femininity sparks with the masculinity, and you can appreciate someone's beauty and even be attracted in your masculinity towards their femininity, but it not be a desire for, or some kind of thoughts about, you know, a genital expression of that. But I'm saying on the basic level of what we normally call sexual attraction is you like the idea that you like the thought of having sex with some person, right? I mean, isn't that what we're talking about? And I want to color outside the lines sometimes. And I admitted that. Andrew comes out on the show as being opposite sex attracted. The gay bar is this place where people can come and be among others. Now, I think there's two sides of this thing. One side we can understand and imitate. One side is just a retreat, possibly from us, but, you know, but also a retreat, into someplace where we won't be challenged, right? So here's the thing is that people start to think that the only way that you can be loved is to not be challenged. And they will not accept challenge unless they feel loved. Now let's flip a weird example here, right? Maybe you're gay and you're in the closet and you start going into this culture where there's a bunch of people who are out, but you feel accepted and loved and not judged and affirmed. So you will actually accept some challenge from them, but what they might be challenging you to do is to have the courage to come out, right? To have pride in yourself. I'm purposely using these words, courage, pride, you know, to be brave and to come out and to face the consequences. And so it's not that the irony is, it's not like they're retreating into this space where they won't be challenged in any way. They do get challenged. I would say probably in the wrong direction, but they're open to challenge. People are open to being challenged if they perceive that the person challenging them firmly believes that they are communicating the true good for that other person, right? So maybe that's why they don't want to come to our churches. Maybe it's not because they're being challenged. Maybe they just don't feel loved. And people are open to a lot if they really feel loved. Now, the problem is, especially in this modern world, to love someone is to say that there's nothing wrong with them and everything they're doing is awesome. And no, that's just false. But I don't think deep down anybody really buys that. If someone is around everyone always treating them like that, they kind of come off as a yes man and a sycophant or kind of a bootlick, and nobody wants that. I mean, nobody of any real substance, nobody who's really trying to seek. Now, I'm talking about people that are trying to really seek some kind of reality. They're trying to have an engagement and an encounter with actual reality. And so there's number one. Do people feel loved? Now, there's a difference between loving and affirming their activity or their action. Here's a good example. So I remember that when I was living in California, working with my company, Coffee Boy, I went down to Santa Monica, and there was this guy named Pastor Rich Broxma. I don't know if Rich is around still. If by some weird providence you'd ever listen to this, shout out to Rich Broxma. He was a pastor of a small church down there in Santa Monica, and they had bought this old coffee house. There's a little neighborhood coffee house, and this coffee house had been a Christian coffee house, right? Well, I use that word loosely. So I saw this shop in the way it looked before he got done kind of working on the remodel, and it had literally posters on the wall. This isn't a neighborhood with a high concentration of gay people, right? And it had posters on the wall with two men, the hands of two men being held kind of in a, you know, they're holding hands, and a big circle and a slash through it, and then a quote from like Leviticus about stoning gay people or whatever. That was their idea of evangelization. And so I'm standing there tasting Rich on some espresso, trying to get his espresso account. We're talking about, you know, using these kind of places to reach people. And this guy comes in, pokes his head in the door, kind of steps inside. And he's like, and when I heard him speak, it was pretty obvious he was gay. And he said, hey, did you guys buy this coffee house? Is, you know, are you reopening this coffee house? And, Rich turns and kind of engages him, smiles, says, yeah, I am. And he says, is it still a Christian coffee house? And Rich said, no. And the gay guy says, thank God. And shakes his hand and says, when are you going to be open? Well, a couple weeks. All right, I look forward to it. I live around the corner. This was my local shop, but somebody took it over. And so this guy had a local coffee house. Some Christians took it over, and their entire agenda was to just condemn him before he had even ordered something. So Rich turns and looks at me and says, okay, I know what you're thinking. I'm like, no, I get it, man. And he says, I get it. You didn't lie to the man. He says, no. He said, what he meant by a Christian coffee house, this is not in any way, shape, or form. So he asked me, I assume he was asking about a definition. So I said, no. I said, no, I agree with you. What he's picturing when he asked that is not what this is going to be. And it wasn't. The shop, I don't know if it's still there. It's called the Talking Stick. It's in Santa Monica. And I went to shows there and stuff, and it was a, there was Christian bands playing sometimes. I went and saw Mike Knott play there one time. But all kinds of people hung out there. Right. So I guess, is your place, and by your place, I mean your church, your coffee house, your business, your home, your area around you, your mode of engagement with people, your area, your influence. Is that someplace where people feel safe? Now, that's the other thing I kept hearing, that this was a safe place, and it was such a violent, horrid thing for this man to shoot up a place that people go to feel safe. Right. And I get that, you know, and when you start listening to these things, you become less shocked that they used a comparison to a church or called it sacred. It was a place where they could be loved, where they could be safe. Right. And so there's a question, are people that you disagree with safe around you? Now, once again, safe may be interpreted by some people as zero challenge to who I am. I would say it's zero challenge or challenge in love after you've earned the right to be the one to challenge. So I think that's a good distinction. I guess that's the thing that I want to talk about today. That's the only thing I really wanted to say, is that these guys were there that night. These people were there that night. They were shot and killed because they were seeking a place that was safe, where they were not reduced. Now, some of them want to reduce themselves just to being gay or trans or whatever. They want to make that their identity, right? But I think people want to be accepted as persons and not reduced to some issue, and certainly not reduced to some sin. You know, John Paul II once famously said, I'll paraphrase because I don't have time to look it up, that you are not the sum total of everything that's happened to you, to everything you've done, of your sins and all this stuff. You are the sum total of God's love for you. That's who that person is. And I guarantee you that if he'd have felt that someplace else, maybe your church, maybe your shop, maybe your home, maybe he wouldn't have been there getting killed on early Sunday morning. Maybe he'd have been home in bed asleep, get a good night's sleep, come to your church the next day, because he felt loved even though he disagreed. Anyway, that's all I got today. Let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counterposition. Thanks for coming out.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.